F4.
Number 24A.
We have started this morning with that in the third part B, from the point of view of love, which wants to show that from the point of view of love in absolute Christian Science, love gathers together the whole ideal of truth into one, so that there is just the oneness of being, so that the infinite one shows itself forth as a oneness of being, in which there is no more any sign of evil, of sin, sickness and death. All that is cast out and is dealt with in the part A from the point of view of truth. So we have here one of the purest sermon that was ever preached on in the world, that sermon at the Last Supper that Jesus was delivering to the disciples before he went up to Jerusalem to be crucified. So he gave, so to say, the highest teaching he would know of the oneness of being. And we have seen that this oneness of being he shows in four great different subjects, and we have started with the very first one, the Word, that first one that would show that those fundamental elements of being, namely the Word and the Christ and Christianity, are all together one, that one cannot split them up, that one cannot use one alone, but that they always must be seen as one consciousness. So he was first stating the Word is always that which states, always that which puts down the proposition from which to work afterwards. So first we always must have some kind of a proposition that states what is under consideration. And so he states here this oneness of Father, Son and all in four different shades. So we have the subtones indented from the point of view of the Word, from the Christ, Christianity and Science. And we have seen this oneness so that he started out, "Let not your heart be troubled." That's the tone that goes through the whole sermon here, to show that there is no occasion for being troubled in any way, because in the oneness of being there is nothing that could be of any accusation, could be of any trouble to us, so that our heart can be at peace. So he starts out with that little shade of the Word first, where he said that in his Father's house are many mansions, showing that each one has his niche in the infinite one. Each one can fill in his right individual mission in the infinite one. No one is excluded. Everyone finds his mission nicely lined out, nicely placed in the whole of the plan of love. So there is no way that we should be in any way troubled. When he has shown that each one individually is important and has its place in the whole plan of love, then he shows that therefore from the point of view of the Christ, that each one works the works of God, that then he is, so to say, in accord, in agreement with the Father, and then he works that work which God works, he works the works of God. He blends with the Christ, and so the Christ is bringing out and manifesting only that what the Father does and what the Father wants to do. Then with a little touch of Christianity, where he would show that therefore if we are working the works of God and of the Christ and in accordance to it, then that Christ always manifests itself to each individual in an individual way and brings to each individual his individual revelation, so that he manifests himself to all, to each one. Each one has access to the Father. Each one has all what the Father has. What the Father has, we have too. And so gives the sense that each one has access to individual revelation and is never excluded. All are called to be a revelator. All are called to be a part in the whole plan of the new light, of the new paradigm, and therefore feels that he is important, that his part that he plays in the whole plan is necessary. And finally, from a little touch of science, he goes on, and therefore this gives to each one individually peace. I give you peace, and the peace you have, I leave you, you can have it, so nobody can take away your peace except you yourself take it away. But if you say with the oneness with the Father and the Christ, you have peace within your heart, and that nobody can away. And in this way, the prince of this world finds nothing in me. The prince of the world in the part A has been cast out. Here in the part B, the prince of the world comes. He finds no foothold in our consciousness. He finds no place. He cannot enter anywhere. So that we see that even the prince of the world has nothing in me. So that nothing can be disturbing within us. Therefore, again, let not your heart be troubled. This was the end, not quite the end. I left out the last verse, which was quite cute. I think John sometimes is quite a cutie. What he says at the end of it, says, "Arise, let us go hence." But I didn't go anywhere. Still sitting there, but the idea behind is so wonderful. It says, you know, you can't stay with the word. That's not good enough. I have told you that long ago, at the beginning of the gospel. I said, don't stay with the word. You have to go on to the Christ. So here also he says, well, let's arise and go hence. Well, let's arise in consciousness and go to the next subject, to the next side of the holy city, and that is naturally the Christ. So we come to the second point, Christianity as the Christ. And we must see that the sermon that he delivers here has quite a different subject, that it has a different attitude, a different tone comes in. Now the tone that comes in, you will certainly see very quickly when you read that text, that he always talks about abiding. That gives the tone of the Christ here, abiding in this oneness of the Word and the Christ. It's not enough to have the proposition, it's not enough to have the teaching that says, look here, that is the proposition that the Word, the Christ and Christianity are all one, and that's a wonderful thing, and leave it at that. The second aspect of the Holy City is the Christ, and the Christ is always that where we have to be at one with it, the atonement. You have also in the Christian Science textbook the second chapter, atonement, as the Christ. And so also here he gives a great sense to stay with it, to atone with it. This term like abiding comes up again and again and again, or remaining, abiding, remaining, continue. Can you see that you have to be a sticker to the Christ? You don't have to let it go, that one has to adhere to it constantly. This is the tone that is presented here. So that actually that a real Christianity can only bring forth fruit afterwards if first we are sticking with that proposition that was shown with the word. So he tries to illustrate that sticking with the word and the Christ through the symbol of the husbandman that has a vineyard and the vine in it, and the vine that has branches and bears fruit. So we have three different positions again, the husbandman, the vine, and the branches bearing fruit. They symbolize the husbandman, the word, then the vine, the Christ, and then the branches, the fruits that come from the vine. So this is what he says now in chapter 15. He says, I'm the true vine. You see, I am, the Christ says, I am the true vine, and my Father, the Word, is the husbandman. Every branch in me, that's now Christianity, and so we come to Christianity, which is the main accent. Every branch in me that bears not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purges it, that it may bring forth more fruit. As can you see, it brings forth more fruit, more Christianity, more demonstration. So this is the symbol he takes and says, therefore, abide in me, and I abide also in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, the branch can do nothing of itself, we can do nothing of ourselves. That's the old sense, that we can manage the world, that we have dominion over the world, that we can make the demonstration. It says, no, you can't do that. The branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, except it abide in the Christ. So no more can ye, except ye abide in me. So we feel here, can you hear the tone, abide, abide, with the branch abide with the vine, does not fall away from the vine. So without really the Christ consciousness, we cannot make a true demonstration. This, you know, is my old war song that I have been preaching over the last few years, that we always try to make our demonstration by going out from Christianity, without and from the Father, and say, we go out and say, yes, in order to make the demonstration, I go to God, to the Father, to the Word. And then we are filling our thoughts with what the Word is, with what mind is, what spirit is, principle, and so on, and the ideas of the seven synonymous terms, and we fill our thought, and then we say, in that days of creation, in the sixth day, then man has dominion over all the world. Then we feel, if we have filled our consciousness with the Word, that has dominion. Well, it hasn't. It hasn't. Because we have left out the Christ. We have left out that sense that which I have established in my consciousness as the Word has a Christ, and that I have to let that Christ work the way it wants to work. That what the Father worketh, the Son worketh. So it is not so what the Father worketh, we work. That is leaving out the Christ. And we must give the Christ first a chance to define what he wants to bring out in this situation. What is the purpose of the Christ in that situation? And that may be something very different than what we desire, than what we wish, than what we are looking for. It is that enormous humility that we have to have in ourselves, and really say, well, do what you want to do. Thy will be done, not my will be done. And so we must see that the branch must first be one and abide in the Christ, so that we let the Christ do the works and not we doing the work. That is brought out here wonderfully, constantly, that he would say that. So he said that without the Christ, without abiding with the vine, we cannot bear fruit. We cannot bear fruit. I am the vine, he says. Ye are the branches. So he said, the Christ is the vine. Ye are the branches. Ye are Christianity. He that abideth in me, he repeats it again, abideth. Huh? He that abideth in me, in the Christ, and I in him, the same beareth forth much fruit. Much fruit. So only as we let the Christ define what should be demonstrated, and we humanly don't know what he wants to demonstrate, it again needs that spiritual courage to let Christ work, without that we give him advice and say what he should work. That needs that humility, and just to be on our knees, so to say, and say, I don't care what happens with me, as long as I see that the Father has a Christ, and the Christ is at work, and it works, and it works, and it works, and it bears much fruit. The Christ bears much fruit. And I can translate that one truth right down to idea. So again he says, for without me ye can do nothing. He brings that out all over again. If a man, he says, abide not in me, can you see again, abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. If we try to demonstrate the Word without the Christ, we are cast forth and we wither. Because then you can easily see that we stay only with the Word, and the Word is that, if it's not combined with the Christ, we have seen that, is that which withers away, that it decreases, that the Word alone decreases. And I have seen that so often that even the most ardent students, the most devoted students who are constantly working with the Word and with the seven synonymous term and the seven synonymous term and the days of creation and the seven synonymous term and the days of creation without touching the fourfold calculus, you know, as John Dolly has written in that letter, we will be sunk. John, the Gospel writer, showed that so clearly in the second part, that without the Christ we bear no fruit. Here again he comes forth and brings it out as demonstration. And men gather, if a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered. And men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. So without the Christ, we are just a castaway, as Paul would say it. Huh? That we are without taking the Christ and staying with the Old Testament, staying with the Word, we are a castaway. We are castaway. So we really can see that it's so important to see that we bring forth in our consciousness not only the Word consciousness, which is necessary at the beginning, but also the Christ consciousness, because without that there will be no progress in our life. Again he says, 7, if ye abide in me, can you see how he repeats and repeats? Huh? If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. This is true prayer. He says, true prayer, you can ask what you want. It will be given to you. But the condition to ask is, if you abide in me. Only then you can ask whatever you want, and it shall be given to you. Abiding in me, abiding in the Christ, means to say, not my will be done, but thy will be done. That's abiding in the Christ. Then everything is possible. And the statement is true that it says, with God all things are possible. But that is an abbreviation of saying, with God who has a Christ, everything is possible. So Mrs. Eddin actually could not always repeat the same thing and say, when she speaks about God, that the God must have a Christ. That's the whole textbook that brings that out, that it is a Word section and a Christ section and a Christianity section and a Science section that brings it out. So true prayer is here really shown as always being answered if we abide in the Christ. Then that which the Christ wants to bring out will be brought out. But we do not know what he is going to bring out. That's the point. And so we have to say, well, whatever happens, I accept it. I accept it. I know, you know, the life of spiritual development in Christian Science is not a rosy one. It's a heck of a job. It's not easy. I remember as a young student, when I came away from university with no money in my pocket and I didn't know where to turn, I only knew that I would not be allowed to betray John Dolly. That I knew. Not to betray John Dolly, I meant not to betray John Dolly's teaching. That I knew. I would have felt miserable all my life if I would have left it, just because I didn't have the penny in my pocket. So I had to pray like hell to find really my way, to find my mission, to find what to do. If I think back of those years, it wasn't easy, I tell you. It wasn't easy, but it was wonderful. But it was those years of discovery, of seeing deeper and deeper into the structure of being. I remember so well when I was praying and praying that with that paragraph on scientific obstetrics, that the birth will be safe, that I had to put away all material conception so that I could really abide with the Christ. That I would always say, I don't mind if you send me to Timbuktu, it doesn't matter. As long as I do the job, you have to go so, you have to go down on your knees so deeply that you really say it doesn't matter humanly what happens as long as I abide with the Christ and the Christ will show you the way. But naturally, he did show the way. But it takes something. And it's not easy to be a Christian Scientist in the true sense of the word. So herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. That ye may bear fruit. Only when you demonstrate that Christ consciousness, then you are glorified in the Father. So only then shall ye be my disciples. And then he answered again. So before he has said, ye shall be my, I know you that you are my disciples if you obey the commandment, love one another. Now here in the Christ he says something else. He says, ye are my disciples if ye really bear fruit through the Christ consciousness. Then we go further and come to a little subtone from the Christ, still under that main tone of abiding in the Christ. We have here as an epitome, abiding in love means laying down one's life for one's friends. Always again comes in that question that love means to lay down really one's false concept of life, so that the true life can break through and can lead us the way of life, the true way of life. Again here you have always the repetition of abiding in love, of remaining in love, of continuing in that love. You hear again the Christ at work. It says here, 9, as the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now you begin to see now always that it goes from 1 to the 2 to the 3. In that sermon, he stresses now that the 1 and the 2 are 1 always, but also the 2 and the 3 is 1, so that the 1 and the 3 is 1, so that there is just oneness in being. He goes on and says, if ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love. Here again the abiding. Even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. So in the measure as the Son or the Christ abides with the Father, in the same way we should abide in the Christ and in that love. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Well, this he said long before as a main subject. He repeats it again. This is a good teaching, always to bring back the important point that one has stated. But then he comes to the main point and says, greater love has no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friend. So that what is that? To lay down one's life for the friend. It means that we lay down a false concept of life about all our friends, about everybody, so that we take everybody away, take from everybody away his mortality, that we lay down the sense that he is a mortal, that we don't consider him as a mortal. And this is love, that we don't constantly meet other people as people, but that we free them from their mortality. So tracing, so to say, everything that is evil back to animal magnetism, and not to make something, some reality out of it. 15, I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father, I have made known unto you. Good. This is good. This is just what we feel when we see something else. I call you friends because we can't help, but when we see something more of the Father, something more of the science of being, we can't keep it for ourselves. We have to give it to the other. We have to make it known to you. That's our friendship, that we give to the whole world what we know, that we don't keep it as a secret back to ourselves. So often patients have a feeling that the practitioner has some secret tricks that he learned in class, and so he always wants to find out what are that secret teaching and those secret tricks which they got in class. There is nothing secret about it, because everything that is true within ourselves can't stay within ourselves. It has to get out. One has to get it out of one's system or one explodes. And there's a feeling, now it's time, I have to get it out. I have to get it out. Or I can't keep it anymore to myself. So you lay down your mortal sense of life and say, this belongs to everybody. This belongs to all people. This belongs to the whole world. And so, because we can see, this is Christianity, that we see that every idea can take part of the all mind. That all mind is the mind of everyone, and everyone has access to that one mind. And we are not going to hold it back for ourselves. And then 16, ye have not chosen me. This is a terrific thing. I think we first turn the reels.